Welcome to episode 87. I'm Stuart McCullough, I'm the CEO of VHAA. And starting with this week's industrial roundup, and in particular with community health, this week sees the ballot being declared for the Health and Allied Managers and Admin Agreement. A big thanks to all of our community health members for their contribution and patience during that process. We're also continuing to draft and finalise the Allied Health Professionals Agreement and Medical Scientists Agreement and Dental Therapists Agreement for our community health members. With respect to health services, and starting with the mental health agreement, there is a meeting this week of the CWMS Advisory Group. There's also a dental EBA reference group meeting and another meeting with regards to the workplace trainer careers advisor role prescribed by the Health and Allied Agreement. On Friday, we'll be returning to the Fair Work Commission regarding a dispute about Clause 91 of the Allied Health Professionals Agreement, which concerns the advertising of vacancies. We look forward to continuing constructive discussions with VAPA before the Commission on that day. And last but not least, a big thanks to members and their role in ensuring that the general dentists, specialist dentists, dental therapists and biomedical engineers agreements are all proceeded and concluded their ballots prior to the caretaker period. I can now advise that three of those agreements, the dental general and the specialist dentists, as well as the dental therapists agreements, have now been lodged, and we anticipate lodging the biomedical engineers agreement early this week. As always, you can find updates as to our activities and the status of agreements through the VHAA community app. And that's it for this week's Industrial Roundup.
Welcome to the weekly update, where we go in depth with a particular topic. Joining me today is Daniel Pullen, Senior Workplace Relations Consultant. Welcome, Daniel.
Thank you, Emma.
So, Daniel, it's the first time I'm leading the podcast today, so the usual arrangements is getting the clue. Would you like to reveal it today?
That's correct. Happy to do so, Em.
So, what actually is that for people listening and watching the podcast? What's the clue?
Is an image of a Mini Cooper.
So, do you know what model Mini Cooper that is?
I don't, but my illustrious colleague drives a Cooper. Maybe you could tell me.
I do. I actually drive that particular model, and it's a Baker Street model.
Right.
So, based on that clue, can you guess what the topic is for today?
If it's Baker Street, it has to be food services.
So, I'm going to take one of Stuart's one-liners, and that guess couldn't be more wrong, Daniel. But as I mentioned earlier, that is a Baker Street model. And there is a song by Jerry Rafferty called Baker Street, and it has the all-time greatest sax riff, which is what Stuart's told me. And so, therefore, the title for today is the sax agreement.
Wonderful. And that seems like it's a very common phrase that I hear from Stuart every time I perform my podcast. So, so that agreement, the sax agreement, was recently approved. Is that correct?
Yes, that is correct. It was approved on the 16th of October, but it actually comes into operation on the 23rd.
Okay, so starting with the basics, who does the agreement cover?
It covers social workers, welfare workers, community development workers and youth workers in community health centres.
So the agreement was also approved with undertakings. What is that all about?
So the undertakings form a part of the approval process. The Commission has to be satisfied that the agreement is better off overall when compared to the relevant Mond Award. Mm-hmm. And when we lodged it, they did raise some concerns. And so we had to do some undertakings so those concerns were alleviated in order for the agreement to be approved.
Okay, so where can the community health centres find these undertakings?
So the undertakings sit at the back and the front of the agreement. They're not drafted in the agreement, so it's very important that when they are referring to certain terms that they need to ensure that there's no undertakings.
Okay. And what are some of the changes?
So some of the changes are related to provisions that won't affect members, such as broken shifts, sleepovers, and the introduction of a night shift allowance where people start before 6 a.m.
Okay. What about the changes that are more relevant to community health centres?
So for those changes, we've got overtime on a Sunday. All hours are paid at double time, whereas before it was time and a half for the first 2 hours and double time thereafter. There is now maximum hours per shift of 10 hours. Previously, you could do 12 hours for a youth worker. Recall, returning to the workplace, it's a minimum of 2 hours, whereas previously it was 1 hour in all instances, and also some allowance increases for the meal. allowance.
Okay, so you've just briefly talked about changes related to the undertakings. What about changes that were a result of bargaining itself?
Well, I put them into two broad categories. One is consistency, and then the other is related to claims that were made by either parties.
So what changes were made for consistency?
So there were changes to some clauses such as consultation, and that includes like some of the definitions to measure and mitigate change. Mm-hmm. The parental leave clause, which included NES updates, the dispute settlement clause, and then also the redundancy clause, which includes making sure that people don't go backwards in their redundancy payment at 10 years. It remains at 16 weeks before it went backwards and went to 12. And then also an annual close down provision, which is new to this agreement.
Sure. So what about the changes related to claims by parties during bargaining?
Oh, well, I think some of the major ones were obviously the wage outcome, mm-hmm. the family violence leave clause, and the portability of personal / carer's leave.
So the wage outcome itself is quite complex, isn't it?
Yes, it's very complex, and that's as a result of the equal remuneration order under the relevant modern award, mm-hmm. which is the Social Community Home Care and Disability Services Award 2010.
So tell me more about the ERO.
So the ERO is a direct result of the Fair Work Commission decision in 2012, where they found that there was no equal pay when you compare state government organisations with the social and community services sector, and that really gender was a predominant factor in creating those differences.
Okay, so what are the main elements of an ERO?
So the main elements of the ERO were that the modern award wage rates would be increased, and the increase ranges from 23 to 45% depending on the classification, that the increases were payable over 9 equal instalments in December each year, that each employees would also receive the Fair Work minimum wage increase each year, and that where employees had higher wage rates under the relevant pre-modern award, that they would still receive the benefits of the ERO, mm-hmm. but that those benefits will be slightly smaller because they're closer to those end rates.
Okay. So how does this process translate into the wage outcome for the agreement?
So although the new agreement contains the modern award classification structure, mm-hmm. employers still have to refer to the relevant pre-modern award classification in order to determine an employee's wage rate.
Right. And what is the relevant pre-modern award?
So the relevant pre-modern award is the Social and Community Services Victoria Award 2000.
So does the process apply to new employees as well?
Yes, it does.
Okay. And are community health services familiar with the classification structure from the modern award classifications that have been inserted into the agreement and pre-modern award classifications?
Yes. For the pre-modern award classifications, they were actually the classifications that were inserted in the previous agreement.
And the modern award?
So with the modern award, employers should definitely be familiar with it because they have had to do the translation process to make sure that they're paying minimum wages already.
Okay, so are there any exceptions?
The only exception where the agreement is different is that we have some additional pay points for some of the SACS levels.
So when is this change effective?
It's effective from the first full pay period on or after the 1st of July 2017.
Okay, and does the ERO also apply to new pay points?
Yes, it does.
So I understand that the translation occurs from the first full pay period on or after the 1st of July 2017. Mm-hmm. For the purpose of this podcast, are we going to use a common term for that date?
I think just translation date.
Okay. So could you take us through the translation arrangements aligned to that translation date?
Yes. So a SACS employee, level 1 pay point 3, who is in their fourth year of service as at the translation date, will translate to a SACS level 1 pay point 4. A SACS employee level 2 pay point 4, who is in their fifth year of service as at the translation date, will translate to a SACS level 2 pay point 5. A SACS employee level 3 pay point 4, who is in their fifth year of service as at the translation date, will translate to SACS level 3 pay point 5. A SACS employee level 3 pay point 4, who is in their fifth year of experience as at the translation date, will translate to a SACS level 3 pay point 5. A SACS employee level 4 pay point 4, who is in their their fifth year of experience as at the translation date, will translate to SACS level 4 pay point 5. and then a SACS employee level 5 pay point 3 who is in their fourth year of experience as at the translation date will translate to a SACS level 5 pay point 4.
That's definitely a mouthful of information. Well done. And probably more of a benefit for those of you that are watching that have the table in front of them to see that translation.
So, yes.
Are there any more changes that were made to the wages?
Yes, there was bringing forward the ERO by 6 months, mm-hmm. From December to July.
So when is the change effective from?
So that change is effective from the first full pay period on or after 1st of July 2016. Mm-hmm.
And why bring forward an ERO and rely on the Fair Work Commission minimum wage to increase and index the wage rates for this agreement?
So applying the ERO 6 months earlier and relying on the Fair Work minimum wage increase means that we know that at all times mm-hmm. the agreement proposal will be at or above minimum wages.
Okay, so how often will community health centres now have to review wages for their employees?
So community health centres will no longer have to review them twice a year anymore in July and December. It will only be in July.
Fantastic. So what about pay point and year increment progression?
So pay point and yearly increment progression still applies as per the normal arrangement.
Are there any employees that won't receive any form of back pay?
Yes, only some. The employees that translate to the SACS level 1 pay point 1 to pay point 3 who don't have enough experience to go to the new pay point 4.
Right, and why is that?
That's because the ERO doesn't apply to the level 1, so there's no ERO 6 months early, and then obviously they don't reach the extra increment. And
sure.
People have already paid the July increases every year.
Okay. Any other employees?
The only other employees is where the previous agreement was higher than the new agreement wage rates.
So what happens when that occurs?
So where this occurs for existing staff, the previous agreement rate basically gets maintained until the new agreement wage rates exceed that. So it's really a maintenance provision.
Sure. So what processes have to change as a result?
So community health centres should be doing the same processes they currently do, mm-hmm. but just in reverse. The SACS agreement now contains the modern award classification structure mm-hmm. as the primary classification, and then employers need to translate employees to the pre-modern award classification, which is what was in the previous agreement. So it's kind of like that statement, same, same, but different.
Sure. So what about the allowances?
So the allowances are to increase in line with the Fair Work Commission increase, mm-hmm. and that's backdated to the first full pay period on or after the 1st of July 2016 and so on each year.
So is there also a lump sum payment?
No, there isn't.
And what about some of the other major changes in this agreement?
In terms of new clauses, I'd probably point out some of the clauses we talked about earlier, mm-hmm. portability of personal / carers leave, mm-hmm. the family violence leave clause, and cashing out of annual leave.
So the portability of personal and carers leave, did SACS employees not already have this entitlement?
No, they didn't. Unlike other agreements, they didn't have any portability, but now they do.
And is it limited to just the employers in the agreement?
Yes, it is. It's just limited to the list at the back.
Okay. Are there any other restrictions to the portability?
Yeah, there's a few more. It's capped at a 10-day transfer, which is pro rata for part-time employees. The break in between employment between community health centres can't be more than 5 weeks. And the employee must provide their new community health centre with a certificate of service within 2 weeks of starting employment.
So what about the family violence leave clause?
So as a part of the agreement, we developed a standard family violence leave clause specific for community health.
So what is the amount of leave available?
So it's 20 days non-cumulative each year, pro rata for part-times. It's also available to casuals, but unpaid.
Sure. And what about where an employer is supporting a family member or a household member that's experiencing family violence?
So in certain circumstances, the agreement allows those employees to access their existing personal / carers leave.
So what do community health centres need to do as a result of the family violence leave clause?
So we're aware of a number of community health centres that already have policies on family violence leave. Mm-hmm. So really they've got to ensure general compliance with the clause and then also update some policies. And there's also a requirement that some guidelines, local guidelines, need to be developed to help support the clause.
So you also mentioned the cashing out of annual leave?
Yes. So the cashing out of annual leave is another new clause that wasn't in the existing agreement that allows people to cash out leave in accordance with the NES.
Sure. So you've only mentioned a small number of the major changes. Are there any more?
Yes, there's actually quite a few more major and minor changes, but obviously we don't have a lot of time in our general podcast, so we'll be here forever. So I've just done a brief overview.
For sure. So where can employers find further information?
Well, because we're in the implementation phase, we've already done a lot of things, such as issue the salary circular, which is salary circular 705, and we've also issued an implementation guide, which is contained in bulletin 2356, and then also this podcast.
So if members wanted to get an understanding of all the major changes, we'd suggest that they looked at the implementation guide in bulletin 2356,
yes.
Watch this podcast, and also review the salary circular at number 705.
Yes, that's correct.
So can members raise further implementation issues?
Yes, of course they can. Over the next few months, we'll keep a bit of an eye on the implementation to see where we might need to develop further material, such as specific guides on some of the new clauses.
So what about the next phase?
So the next phase is the review phase, and that's really about reviewing the agreement for quality assurance, and we might have to do that concurrently with the planning phase only because the agreement expires in 2020, so it's quite soon.
Sure. Thank you, Anna, for taking me through the changes to the SACS agreement.
Thanks, Daniel.